rebel fist, juggalist, specialist, predator and survivalist, spit heaven, fire from his lips, burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can join us at www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can join us at abitumi.com. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream from Ghana. Or you can download the TuneIn radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, professor of media studies at Rutgers University, writer and investigative journalist, Professor David A. Love, will be joining us this evening. Wrote an interesting article that I saw in the Griot. I sent it out in my notification of tonight's program. We'll be talking about that article this evening. Black faces and high places have a responsibility. And you can join us, be part of the conversation. We're going to be talking about that and several other article published works that he has done. And you can join us and be part of the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. With a question or comment, that 215-490-9832. 32. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening at 7:12 here on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum in Philadelphia at 7 Denard Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
As you can hear in my voice, me and the biology of my body is going through, you know, we're going through a little challenge over here, but I'm doing fine in general.
Yeah, I hear that. I can't say it's a summer cold, but I hear something coming on over there.
Mm-hmm. But I am looking forward to, you know, I'm glad that Professor Love, you know, did this here article in the relationship to, I think it raises a broader question for us now in this time, you know, especially as this presidential election is going on, of what is it that we consider Black leadership and how do we evaluate them and what are the rewards and punishments that we have for them in relationship to who they support or supposed to represent.
You know, we We talk about this quite a bit during the program, Richard, our programs, period. And periodically guests come on, and this is a central theme of a lot of things that we talk about. Because, you know, when we see the situation that we're dealing with and have been dealing with for centuries in this country, and it's necessary to have visionary leadership to move our people forward. But when you have situations like we're dealing with now, and this is nothing new, we have to develop ways where we can deal with this as a collective, because this has become a major problem for our people. And it's only going to get worse moving forward. But before I introduce our guest this evening, I want to read the first paragraph of his article here, because I think it sets the tone for our conversation this evening with him and some in relationship to some of his other articles. The article, Black Faces in High Places. Let me read the first paragraph. It says, "Black people, when you make it to the top, do you kick down the ladder or help other people, climb up? Are we trying to help everyone or just help me, myself, and I? Are we in service to people or to an empire that is harming black folks, indigenous peoples, and marginalized? Are we water carriers dousing water on a big house engulfed in flames? And when we witness injustice and exploitation, how large of a bag would it take for us to shut up and look the other way? These questions we must ask these days, with turmoil both at home and devastation in Haiti, Sudan, the Congo, and Gaza." Our guest this evening in conversation, professor of media studies at Rutgers University, writer and investigative journalist, Professor David A. Love is with us. Professor Love, how are you, sir?
Brother Elliot, I am doing very well. Pleasure to be with you, and hello, Brother Richard.
I'm glad to have you with us, Professor Love, to talk about or expand the discussion on this article that you wrote. Now, this is nothing new, because if any of our listeners look at his past articles, you see that he touches on a lot of themes, but this is not a new theme for him to be dealing with black leadership. And especially now, I think it's timely, because it's a lot going on in our leadership, our quote-unquote leadership. The country puts out front, and it deserves critical discussion, because when you look at what's happening in Gaza, Professor Love, the world is looking at this. And when you see Hakeem Jeffries, when you see Linda Thomas Greenfield, when you see Lloyd Austin, C.O. Brown, Manley, who's head of AFRICOM, when you see these black faces expressing support for what's going on, that gives the world a vision that black people here in America are on board with this. I just want you to kind of expand the discussion on your article and add critical discussion to this thing, because it's not enough black media to talk about these articles or even express a alternate view of what's going on. A lot of black media seems to be water carriers for whether it's the Democratic, most of it is Democratic or Republican Party. They don't voice a people's view of how these things are being accepted or not accepted in the community. But just talk about it from your perspective. Why you wrote this article at this time, and because you mentioned some things in the article, and we're gonna try to pull them apart, because I want you to expand this discussion. But just talk about it. Introduce that article to us.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I would like to also say that I would like to thank you for, doing the work that you're doing and really putting the message out, because it's I think it's a crucial time, and it's really necessary that we discuss these things. And, I think I had been chomping at the bit over this issue for a long time, and it's definitely not the first time that I have written about Black leadership and issues of Black leadership. But I think it was when I saw this sister, Professor Rua Benjamin, who gave this speech at Spelman College. She is an alum of Spelman, and she's a professor at Princeton. And she gave this speech on Founders Day at Spelman, talking about how Black faces in high places are not going to save us. And, you know, she told the class that, you know, people like to talk about how we need to trust Black women. But she made the point that the Black women at Spelman, they need to make sure that they are actually trustworthy and that they make sure that they don't put themselves in positions of power where they maintain the oppressive status quo. So she, in her speech, talked about, you know, these people that we see, these faces in high places, the folks in Atlanta, the political class who were signing on to this cop city, you know, putting millions of dollars into cop city to further oppress Black people. The woman who's the UN ambassador, the Black woman who is putting up her hand every chance that she gets to fight against justice and human rights for Palestinians in Gaza. And we can think of so many other people. And, you know, I thought that this was a perfect opportunity to really dig into this some more. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, I think, the bottom line, the basic question is, what good is it to have Black people in positions of power, positions of influence, and they're not actually doing anything that's going to benefit us? I think for so long we have been thrilled, we have been happy to see people who look like us in these big time jobs, making a lot of money, wheeling and dealing. But are we asking the questions as to what they're doing in these jobs, and what are they doing to make sure that they bring us up, bring some of us up the ladder with them? So that was my starting point for this piece.
Professor Love, we see that, again, going into this election here in 2024, that the Black vote again becomes the key factor. The support for the Democratic candidate seems to be waning. Not seems to be, it is. Each month when they take these polls, it falls further and further. You find some propaganda that's saying that Blacks are going to vote for Trump. I think that he'll probably get some push from folks that don't really know what's going on. But our people seem to be always looking for the lesser of two evils instead of looking for or developing local Black leadership that's going to have morality, justice, and basic caring for the community and the people at heart. I think a lot of this have to start locally in these local elections, local areas where we are dominant in population, to try to change this dynamic of what we're dealing with. And the reason I'm saying this is because we always see that the gatekeepers of this white hegemony, white imperialism, or racist society always tries to be two or three steps ahead of black people or anticipating black people's moves. So we see a lot of this gerrymandering, watering down black districts, taking away their power to vote. And that's not, to me, and I just want to get your perception on it before I pass it over to Brother Richard. I don't think that's to stop them from voting or developing leadership the way it is now, because a lot of this leadership goes along with whoever's spending the money, whether it's Democrat or Republican. I think it's to stop black people from developing any type of conscious leadership that wants to take the people in a different direction. Give me your assessment of that.
I agree completely. I think that you make some very astute points. And, you know, when you said that you think that this is a local issue, I agree, because ultimately we need to cultivate leadership at all levels, beginning at the ground level from you know, all the way to the top. And we can't look at this process that we're engaged in as solely an electoral issue.
Mm-hmm.
Voting, I think, is important, but there is definitely a lot more involved than just voting. And we also can't look at this as something that we show up for every 4 years, you know, prepared to vote for the lesser of two evils. I think there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be done 24/7 so that when the election comes, you know, we know what we want. We have people who are lined up to deliver, and we have an agenda. And what we're seeing now is nothing like that. I mean, I think that you do see some black leadership who come from the community. They are grounded in the community, and they have our best interests at heart. But you also see so many others who have taken the bag. I mean, they, you know, no one can compete with these lobbyists who are funneling millions of dollars to them. And, you know, people who are naturally corrupt or inclined to be corrupt, you know, they will just take the money and fulfill whatever promises those lobbyists want. And, you know, we're left empty handed. And I think we have to look in ways that we can get beyond this cycle, because it's definitely not working for us.
You know, before I pass it over to Richard, you, in your article here, because you kind of mentioned different people and what they're doing. And you said something here that in the article here that I wasn't aware of. And I kind of want you to, because being that you teach at Rutgers, you have taught in Philadelphia, you're kind of close to both areas. You mentioned here in the article about Jay Johnson, who was the former Homeland Security head under Barack Obama, that sits now on the board of Columbia, and Lockheed Martin, a military contractor and major arms supplier to Israel. And you talked about his relationship with Adams. Well, I don't necessarily say his relationship, but him being instructed by Adams to stop those protests in Colombia and other places. And you mentioned about Adams' admiration and holding Israel and their security tactics in high regard. Talk a little bit about that in relation to this subject that we're talking about. When you're talking about Adams and you're talking about AIPAC or Jewish leaders that's in political office, or they don't even have to be Jewish, people that hold influence directing black leadership to do things that are counterproductive to their communities.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I think looking at people like Adams, I think that really helps to define the scope of the problem here. Here is somebody who is mayor of the largest city in the country. He was himself a police officer, and now he is in a position where he can use police power to basically oppress students, disproportionately black students, who are, you know, against what's going on in Gaza. And, you know, it's basically a putting a black face on the empire. So here's a man who is presumably getting money under the table to do this. I say presumably, but he actually had a meeting with billionaires who urged him to crack heads, to basically go after these protesters at Columbia University. And there were also, you know, protests at other universities in New York and around the country, of course. And this is a man who says he wants to do what Israel does. He wants to have drones, you know, have the NYPD use drones the same way Israel uses drones. We know what those drones do. He decided that now he's going to set up a cop city in New York, spend millions of dollars on cop city, on a cop city, you know, a training a center or whatever for police, when this is the same city that has shut down public libraries for our children on weekends. So it shows you that the money is there to do what people in power want to do. And it's all a matter of priorities. And he has decided that he has some priorities, and those priorities are not necessarily, you know, the same as black people. And, you know, and you mentioned Jay Johnson. So here's someone who is obviously strategically placed. Here he is on the board of Columbia University, a black man who, you know, was the former head of Homeland Security, and also on the board of Lockheed Martin, military contractor. I think people have to connect the dots to understand the connections between how these companies are getting paid, how these military contractors are getting paid, how these universities are getting their revenue streams, and how foreign countries are, you know, are profiting in the process. And then, so you have to ask, you know, with all these billions of dollars going to weapons manufacturers, going to weapons to Israel, to Ukraine. So, you know, meanwhile, we don't have reparations. Israel has universal health care. We don't have universal health care. So I think this is all an issue of, you know, where are the priorities, who is in control, and whose interests are being served. And you see people like Eric Adams in New York, people like Jay Johnson, who are benefiting personally and helping people who are already wealthy, helping them obtain more. But what are, you know, what are the common people getting as a result?
Jay Johnson on the board of Lockheed Martin. Lloyd Austin was on the board of Raytheon. I guess he's supposed to step down when he took that position that he has now, but who knows? Richard, jump in here because, you know, in private conversations, Richard, we talked about the need for propaganda, so to speak, and how it's being used currently now. But I'm not going to try to you go ahead, Richard, because I'm just throwing out some things that we kind of discuss in private conversation. But go ahead. I'm going to pass the mic to you.
Yes. And Dr. Love, I mean, and seeing that you are Professor Love, a journalist, you know, investigative journalist, and also teaching, if I'm not mistaken, journalism. The first question that came to my mind was, as you were doing this article, I'm always interested in history. This type of misidentified leadership, or at least what you're helping us to recognize that this may not be a leadership for Black people. Did you come across a leadership that supports the, as you say, the empire itself? Did you come across a point in time where you seen, as you were doing this, this piece, where this transition, I'm gonna call it a transition, took place, and now we're seeing a generational manifestation of people who are not necessarily leaders of the Black community, but leaders of, or maybe representatives of the empire who are Black. Did you come across a period in time where you see this transition occurring based off of you doing this article?
Well, you know, I'm always looking at, history because I think that there are so many lessons that are provided for us. And there's no question that we are at a time now where the in many ways people can see what's happening, can see what's going on, and they can see that there is a leadership that is simply not responding to the times. I think there's so many times and so many points in history where we can see the same thing happening. And I think it's because people don't really understand history that they get this sense that everything is brand new. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, they'll be surprised because they think that this is the first time this has happened. But I think there's so many examples in history where you had a leadership class that either just sat there and did nothing and let things happen, bad things happen, or others who actively participated in the oppression and destruction of their own people. And, you know, you can see examples in this country. You can see examples in, you know, around the world, and particularly when you're looking at societies with colonization, with oppression. You know, you can look at South Africa and the way they used Black police officers during apartheid to bash in African people's heads. It's sadly, too many examples of that.
Yeah, and you know, as you were saying it, because one of the things that we keep developing or trying to develop here is that we are a colonized people, and I've been, you know, looking at say the nation state of Nigeria and its evolution to it, the difference between direct rule and indirect rule. Now, is this these leaders that's in these positions, especially these national positions, they seem more like managers than leaders. They seem to they would fall in a managerial class more than a leadership class, and they're just carrying out the dictates of the bureaucracy that they've been aligned to. What do you think about that? And it's, how do you, you know, help me out with that in relationship to, you know, your article about these guys being representing something else other than quote unquote black people.
Yes. Well, you know, I think what I should have done is put the word leaders in quotes, because I think that their title as leader really comes from the people who give them their paycheck, which is not us. Yeah, I think if they were true leaders, they would be, you know, they would get their marching orders from us and they would be representing us. They're viewed as leaders by the white people who are in control, because, you know, as you know, they love to appoint leaders and thrust them on us. But yeah, I do believe that they are actually managers. You know, they are managing the status quo, and they are not necessarily doing anything innovative. They're not doing anything revolutionary. They're not doing anything to disrupt the current state of affairs. They are definitely pocketing a lot of money. And I also don't see them cultivating any leadership, black leadership, you know, people to come up after they're gone. So, yeah, they are managers in a way, managing the status quo. And I would also mention that this is, you know, obviously a global phenomenon, because in Africa, there are, you know, situations where you have so-called leaders who are being propped up by corporations. Yep. Who want to come in and steal the resources, steal the oil, steal the minerals. And so, yeah, it's something that we have to be vigilant about and really keep our eyes on, because this is a big problem.
And as I turn it back over to Elliot, another thought that came to me as, you know, and you know, Elliot just said that we were talking about the power of propaganda and the effect it has on, and we might explore even to this election. But you, who is looking at journalism and doing investigative journalism, you know, the question that came in my mind is, you know, just to get your feedback, as we look at these individuals and as you lay out in your article, how they're being supported, the type of, as Elliot said, the type of votes that they do that would seem like not in the best interest of the black constituency as a whole. And we're talking about, you know, Palestine and Israel. I was wondering, how much does the black media particularly assist in legitimizing these individuals who are, you know, in these positions or not? Is that, am I incorrect to say that black media has some role to either bring out about the propaganda or at least be advocates of being able to make the distinction, what is a black leader and a leading black? What is the role of black media in relationship to these individuals in these positions?
Yes, I think that the role of black media is crucial. You know, when you consider the history of black media in this country, going back, a couple hundred years, the purpose, you know, the mission was always to, in my view, to really shine a light on the issues, the problems, going on in society, to empower the community and to bear witness. And, I think that in many ways, the media in general have lost their way. Not all, but some, many. And I think it's important for Black media to consider that role that, it has played to empower us. Unfortunately, some media outlets, Black media outlets, will only focus on entertainment and making us laugh and all that. And I like to laugh as much as anybody else. But we need empowerment. And, I think that some Black media outlets have done a much better job than others. Some have fallen off and are not doing what they should. And I think the bottom line is that we can't depend on media outside of the community to tell our story. They're not going to do it. We need our voices and control over the message. And I believe that propaganda is a big problem. I just go back to Malcolm X's powerful quote that he gave when he said, "If you're not careful, the newspapers will have you hating the people who are being oppressed and loving the people who are doing the oppressing." And, he talked about how the newspapers, how they crafted these images of Black people as criminals. And the white public would look at these messages and they would use it to justify having the police come into our communities, arrest us, brutalize us, kill us. And, the white public would think that that the police were justified. So I think it really shows the power of the media, but also I think it points to how we need to control our message and a message that, is going to help us in the end.
We're in conversation.
Yeah, as Professor gives up that question, I'm wondering if Obama set it the standard for these other individuals that's in Professor Love's article. But yeah, that was just a thought.
We're in conversation with Professor of Media Studies at Rutgers University, writer and investigative journalist David A. Love. You can get involved in the conversation too with a question or comment. In fact, you can look at his davidalove.com and look at some of the other articles that he's done in the past. There's a lot of interesting articles there that start critical discussion. Professor Love, you talked about history and the importance of us looking at what has happened to us and moving forward so we don't keep thinking that a lot of this stuff is new. Because sometimes I'm in a business where I deal with a lot of our people all the time. The overwhelming majority of my business is people that look like me. And they talk about, and I'll use Trump as an example, like he's some type of anomaly, that he's one of a kind. He's doing this. This hasn't been done before. But is something wrong with that picture there? Because either when you're saying this, you're not aware of history and all of these people that have been players in this, or you just, I don't know what it is. I don't want to just label a person ignorant, but it's something missing there when you think that when you see a guy like him, that he's just come along, he's one of a kind, and he needs to be stopped. This stuff has been going on with our people. I just did a little impromptu look at from 1900 to around 60, just before Kennedy was elected, because everybody kind of knows from that point on, and looked at some of the election races, whether it was Woodrow Wilson against Taft in the early 1900s, over 150 black ministers appealed to Taft, who was president at the time, about the massacre that had happened to black people in Slocum, Texas. I think over 200 blacks had been murdered. And he didn't do anything about it. But when Wilson was courting the votes, he promised black people he would do a lot for them to make them equal to white citizens. And we know what happened once he became president. He brought the Klan in there. They showed a movie at the White House, and he said it was the greatest thing ever. After him, Warren Harding and Coolidge did the same thing, promised black people all of these things that they would do for them. And they would try to push the anti-lynching bill and others. Nothing was done about it. Herbert Hoover came in the late 20s. And that flood that happened in Mississippi, that it was almost like Katrina that happened in 06, when thousands of black people was left stranded down there. He instituted a colored advisory commission to go down and investigate. They came back with stuff that he wanted them to say. And basically, he double-crossed the black community. Roosevelt went in with a new deal, which was the same old deal for black people. Truman was a clear racist. They said that he used to joke and laugh about and say racist jokes in the White House about black people. So we see that these things, in order for these guys to get elected, they would say anything they could to garner the black vote. So these things are nothing new. But the thing that we need to look at, and our people really need to get a grasp on, is when that meeting that Sherman, who was Lincoln's ambassador, and he was an embassage from Lincoln to the colored leadership at that time, when they met in the city of Savannah in 1865, when they basically wanted to know what black people wanted after turning that tide and winning the Civil War for this union, to preserve this union. And black people told them unequivocally, we want to live by ourselves. We want land. We want to pay for the land. They didn't even say they wanted to give them the land. Our ancestors said that we were going to pay for the land, but we wanted to live by ourselves. In fact, I'll read a direct quote to what one of the ancestors says. The question that Sherman asked them, it says, what state and what manner would you rather live, whether scattered among whites or in colonies by yourselves? The answer, we would prefer to live by ourselves, for there is a prejudice against us in the South that will take years to get over. But I do not know that I can answer for all my brothers, but we would prefer to live separately and by ourselves live together. All the other persons present being questioned one by one answered, and they agreed with Brother Frazier, who was speaking for them at the time. What I wanted to say is, in this relation to what Richard brings up all the time with me in private conversations, our people were prepared to govern themselves in those areas because they had already practiced self-governing with the colored conventions that had been going on from 1830 up until that time, and possibly before that. They would have national conventions, state conventions, local conventions, talking about what they could do among themselves. So after things kind of what they considered a reconstruction of this country, our people were prepared to take the reins and do what they were capable of doing for their communities. And it surprised the whites at that time, because we can see that history shows that they were not only legally attacked with laws, but physically attacked. So I'm just saying that to say, in relation to what you're writing about the problem that we have with selected black officials, if we look at history, we can correct this. But we have to know what we're dealing with, and we have to know what we're up against.
so true, so true. And I think it's no accident that there are these attempts by the white nationalists these days to criminalize the teaching of history.
Yes.
Of black history, because if you, you know, if you hide the evidence of the crime, then, you know, there are, you know, then if you hide the evidence of the crime, then for those who claim that there's a crime and want justice, what do you do? And I believe that because they don't want to deal with what has happened, they want to erase it. And history, yeah, you know, I think many people, including many black people, would be amazed to know about our greatness and about all of the things that we did to empower ourselves. You know, I'm reminded that after the Civil War, there were about 2,000 black elected officials during Reconstruction around the country. And, you know, we had black folks in Congress. We had black governors, senators, and members of Congress, and all of these things. And that all disappeared because the Klan decided that that was going to be put to an end. And they staged coups, and they lynched us, and they removed us from power. We even had a majority of the seats in some of those southern states. People would be surprised to know that. But that doesn't fit in with the narrative that all these, you know, these lazy black people who aren't doing for themselves, you know, they want handouts and they don't deserve anything. You know, of course, that's a narrative that they want to maintain. And removing the historical record helps to, you know, perpetuate those myths, those false narratives, and help to, you know, disempower us.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion. You can get involved, too, with a question or comment by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with Professor of Media Studies at Rutgers University, writer and investigative journalist, Professor David A. Love. We'll be right back.
With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu You Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
A new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we're getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality. And they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
And know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. See, brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community, to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
Whites are expert game players in their contests to maintain absolute power. One of their time-honored gimmicks is to point to individual blacks who've achieved recognition. But look at Ralph Bunche. Think about Lena Horne or Marian Anderson. Look at Jackie Robinson. They made it as one of those who has made it. I would like to be thought of as an inspiration to our young, but I don't want them lied to. Name them for me. The examples of blacks who made it. For virtually everyone you name, I can give you a sordid piece of factual information on how they have been mistreated, humiliated. Not being able to fight back is a form of severe punishment.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free,
He must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood.
For an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:04 on this Sunday edition. Our guest this evening in conversation, Professor of Media Studies at Rutgers University, writer and investigative journalist, Professor David A. Love. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832 with a question or comment. That's 215-490-9832. Hold on a second. Professor Love. Professor Love?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. Before we get a couple of callers involved, I just want to play a couple of clips because Richard talked earlier, and he touched on it briefly about the propaganda. And we see a lot of it now. Here in Philadelphia last week, Biden and Harris, because they've been here, seem like every week they're coming because this is a battleground state, and the polls show that they're behind. So they come here last Thursday, I think, and to institute this black voter to try to stir support from black voters, this black voter initiative plan, where they're coming to talk about what they've done for black people, the jobs percentage is the lowest it's ever been, money dedicated to black businesses, black colleges getting, HBCUs getting money, and this loan forgiveness. Now, as I recall, when he went into the presidency, it was a couple of things on the table that black folks were really pushing. Beside the farmers that had went to him, heads of the farmers union, John Boyd, and some of the other men that had been working, told him about the money that black farmers had basically never received after they won the lawsuit against the federal government for discrimination. So he told them that that he would make sure they get the money, and also that he was appointing Vilsack as the head of Department of Agriculture, which black farmers vehemently disagreed with. But Vilsack became the head of USDA. And the money was put into, I think it was the Build Back Better. I forgot the name of that first one. It might have been Build Back Better. And white farmers all over the country filed federal lawsuits. The banks, a lot of the big banks went to Biden also and said, well, we're not interested in giving black farmers any debt relief. So that money that was in the budget was snatched out. Black folks wanted the voting rights protected. Although I don't understand why, if you're a citizen of this country, why you need any type of specific voting right. But it is what it is. Because, you know, some blacks feel as though that we're equal citizens. It's clear that we're not. They want voting rights protected. They wanted to be protected from these police, which the murders, the kicking down doors. You just had a young man a couple of weeks ago that's in the armed forces get gunned down right in his home by a cop. So those things, and reparations was on the table. Those four things black folks, by and large, was talking about and wanted done. None of those things have been done. In fact, they've told black politicians stop talking about the police so they don't say anything. They didn't change the language now to public safety. they don't mention reparations anymore. I'm talking about the politicians. It's always on the mind of the black rank and file of the black public. The voting rights bill has been stalled. Nothing's been done. But he comes around and gives you all types of generalities about loan forgiveness. And I don't know of any blacks, and I know plenty of people, including my own children, that have went to school and still paying loans, and I'm helping them. So I don't know where this loan, these black people, thousands of black people, millions that have went to school, where this loan's at that they've been forgiven. This propaganda that's going around, black people in business. Philadelphia has 3% of blacks with businesses in the city. 3% of the business is black folks. I think New York might be 4, 5, 6%. None of these cities have very low percentages of blacks in business. You don't get the USBA. I just read off some stats last week about USBA, about the money that the black folks receive business loans from USBA. And you definitely don't get money from the banks. It's so many. There's so much statistics showing that the banks ain't giving black people money to buy a home or to go into business. So all of this rhetoric and propaganda is not based in any fact. And it ties in with the articles that you wrote, not only this last article, but I'm looking at the one you wrote in December of 2022, black leadership can't behave like white leadership with a black face. So I'm just throwing some of these things out here to just to get your thoughts on it. Plus, I want to play a couple of clips, if you don't mind. Some of our leadership, and I use that term very loosely, and the responses that they have given to some of these news agencies that has them on. And also keep in mind, a couple of weeks ago, Hakeem Jeffries was on Face the Nation. No, I'm sorry. 60 Minutes. And made a statement that I haven't heard, and maybe you can help me with this, Professor Love, because I haven't heard any white politician say this or even insinuate it. But he said it. And I think that we have to use our thinking caps to why. He mentioned on 60 Minutes about we can't let the Ukraine fall, even if we have to at sometime in the future send troops. Now, it's a clear reason why he's saying that. And I haven't heard, maybe you've heard, like I said before, Professor Love, maybe you've heard some white politicians indicate that. But I haven't heard it. And I think he said it for a reason. So when you see our children going and fighting in a foreign war for the Ukraine or any of those European countries, that even before this war started, if you looked at the Peace Corps website, they would tell you that if you were black and went over there to volunteer, you'd regularly be called the N-word, be monkey noises. I mean, it was racial degradation working over in those places. But now he, as a black man, is talking about our young people going over there fighting for that place. Are you kidding?
Yes. I mean, perhaps he should go fight over in Ukraine if he thinks that is important. But, I don't see how any of this and what he's really talking about in the end is giving more money to the military contractors. because in the end, that's what it's really all about. And the people who give him the money. But yeah, you really presented some interesting points there. And as far as Biden coming to Philly and touting all the things that he's done, and you did mention, I think, very well, all of the things that were promised, and there hasn't been any delivery. You know, I'm just thinking back at the summer of 2020 when here in Philly and cities all around the country, people were, they were done. They just had it. You know, they were standing up. They were protesting. After George Floyd's murder by police, and you even had some of these Democratic members of Congress, including white members of Congress, wearing kente cloth and kneeling on one knee. And now I just heard, it was like a couple weeks ago, that Biden wants to spend billions of dollars and put 100,000 more police officers on the streets. And I'm thinking, what are we doing here? How did we get here? Obviously, folks are not listening to us. And, you know, you mentioned the farmers, the black farmers, and the years of theft. You can also look at the HBCUs, something else that I've written about, the billions of dollars that have been denied.
Yes.
To the HBCUs, the land grant HBCUs, the public HBCUs over the years. And yes, reparations and the George Floyd Policing Act, Voting Rights Act, all of these things. And we're supposed to be the group that, you know, is just supposed to go along with all of this, not really question anything. And we're just supposed to be happy, that, you know, that someone is paying us any attention. But you know, what you mentioned about propaganda and the role of that, I think that any democracy, well, you know, maybe one of these days we will actually experience one, but, you know, it seems that you need an informed public,
okay,
informed and educated public for democracy to work. And I believe that, the reason why politicians are able to run this nonsense over us the way they do is because there are so many people who don't have critical thinking skills, or if they do have it, they don't use it. So people will believe anything that they're told. You know, they might believe Trump is a business mogul and a brilliant person, when everything he ever got, he got from his father's wealth, the mob, and whatever else. And, you know, people, and then also, you know, we also have to remember that, you know, somebody like Trump, here's a man whose image was created on TV. The Apprentice, reality TV, you know, people who live in New York and knew Trump, they knew that he was a fraud. But what he was able to do was, you know, get on this reality show. They had the crew come in and they constructed a new boardroom for him, new headquarters, to make himself look like he's, you know, the real deal. And he goes around telling people you're fired and all that. And people see that and they think that's real. And so they put this mediocre white man in the highest position in the country. And you have a couple of black folks here and there who, you know, who fell for that too. But critical thinking skills, understanding history, understanding society, and understanding how people are trying to play us. We need to know. We need to know.
Richard.
Yes. I hear it. Excuse me.
Go ahead. You all right?
Yeah. But you know, Professor Love, one thing that struck me, and there's two things, and I kind of focused on that article about the Black Republican, but that's an interesting, I don't know if it's a phenomenon or not, but or another transition. But let me ask you about my boy Tim Scott. what I'm trying to get in the way you placed him in relationship to the powerful white Christian nationalist community, and I'm assuming that they're supporting him. But the point that I wanted to see your thoughts about: do you think that the Tea Party and the white Christian nationalists as political agents in this election are very active, even though they're not necessarily like before, projected? And do they see, at least that as you put in there, that they see Tim Scott as somebody that represents them in their view? Is there anything that you can, give feedback about how Tim Scott and this political interest group, this white Christian nationalist, how they line up as far as a black representative and a white constituency group in relationship to the article you made, in relationship to here is these black leaders that are not representing black people? Is there anything else you can say to that?
Yeah, well, I believe that the white Christian nationalists, they love them some Tim Scott. I think that there's a limit to how much they're going to support somebody like Tim Scott. I mean, he is useful to them because he is essentially doing the minstrel show on a wide scale and doing it to the detriment of us. And they love him for it. And I saw him the other day. He was giving the commencement speech at, where was it? I forget which college it was, but it was the worst thing I had ever seen. It was one of these white Christian universities, and it was complete coon show. So I look at people like him. I look at people like Clarence Thomas and some others, and they are given power to some extent as long as they fulfill the mission of, white supremacy. But I think there's a limit to how much power they're actually going to get. And I look at just one example, Daniel Cameron, who was the attorney general, black attorney, Republican attorney general in Kentucky. And he was running for governor, and he just knew he was going to become governor because he did whatever he could to make sure that justice was not served for Breonna Taylor, that black woman who was killed in her sleep by police, shot to death. He did whatever he could to make sure that the officers who killed her did not see justice. And he thought he was going to be rewarded for his cooning and tomming. And it turned out that he actually lost that election to the incumbent, a white man, you know, Democrat, and rightly so. But I think it's maybe a lesson for people like that, that, you know, they'll chew you up and then spit you out.
Do you see any chances? Do you see any chances of him getting the vice presidency nomination with Trump in order to make the transition of this black Republican voting thing that people are talking about?
I suppose it's possible, but I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. I really don't. I really don't. I really don't. I think it's all a gimmick, giving us the impression that he has a chance of becoming the vice presidential candidate. I don't see it happening. I could be wrong.
And if I can, I'll just make a commentary. You know, the other day, I guess it was last week, the governor and the lieutenant governor, which is black in Pennsylvania, came through Pennsylvania talking about tourism, you know, and what they're going to, you know, the type of, they're visiting all the different sites as it relates to the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And one thing that I noticed, I got a short sheet, that there was no visitation to any black institutions that could be considered a part of the tourist, you know, to promote as a part of the tourist industry. And I said to myself, now, how is it that this is a black lieutenant governor, which is somewhat quiet, and you hear, and they come to Philadelphia, because the day after, that's when Biden-Harris came, and there is no connection, you know, to that. So I just bring that up in connection to your article about black faces in high places, because you would think that at least one, but to have no visitation, as you're talking about tourism and the celebration of the 250th anniversary of this declaration, and having a black lieutenant governor and in their swing through Philadelphia, there's no referencing. It just seems something. It seems something wrong with that picture to me. I don't know if you got a chance to view that.
I did not see that, but I find it surprising. And I should also mention that I had interviewed the current lieutenant governor. I had interviewed him when he was running. I did a piece for the Griot on black politicians and had interviewed him. I think that that's a cause for concern, considering all of the rich black history in Philly. Philly has been a center for black achievement for, you know, you look at the abolition movement, you look at so many things where black people were front and center, and to not have any mention of us in that, it just doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, if anything, you would want to play that up to, you know, encourage more people to come visit, because then otherwise, what is, you know, what is there to see?
Yeah, it's interesting, and yeah, it's just interesting. But yeah, I thank you for that response. Mm-hmm.
You know, before I go to some of these calls online, the Richard, you mentioned about these ultra conservative that wing of the, I guess, both parties, to be honest. In February, according to a published report, reporters went to Warnock to appeal to him about, because it's the Senate had just voted to send $14 billion to Israel for that genocide that's going on over there. And reporters went to him as a pastor of Dr. King's Church, Ebenezer Baptist Church, to appeal to him. And they said in this article, appeal to his Christian values. They went to pleaded with him as a pastor not to vote against him. This was 15 hours before the vote. And he gave these reporters the runaround. And then he mentioned here, and I'll read this quote. He said, besides, I'm not the only pastor in the Senate. And one of the reporters asked, well, who was the other? And Warnock replied, James Lankford, to which the other pastors gave a collective groan. It says Lankford is from Oklahoma and is known as an ultra conservative and a strong supporter of Israel. He said that Israel is fighting morality while Hamas is not. So instead of him answering the questions, dealing with him when they asked him about being a pastor of Dr. King's Church, how can you vote for this money? He shifts it and talking about, well, I'm not the only pastor, and throws this other guy under the bus, so to speak. They wasn't asking for Lankford. They wasn't even talking to Lankford. And maybe they knew that he was. But they were talking to Warnock. And that was his answer. I just want to play a couple of these clips. I played them for the Time for Awakening audience before. But I just want to play them again in relation to the subject matter that we're talking tonight and some of the things that's going on now, especially around the black vote. A couple of things, and this is Jim Clyburn when he's asked about the black vote and the percentages dropping. I want the listening audience to kind of focus in on his answers. If I can get this to you, I think this is one of them.
I think we are beginning to break through simply because we are having complete reporting rather than the incomplete reporting that was being done before.
How concerned are you when it comes to the president's ability to reach black voters? The president has an approval rating of 65% amongst black Americans, age 50 and up, but that drops down to 32% amongst black Americans under the age of 50. Are you concerned?
I'm concerned with the reporting of this. Yes. When I see those numbers, you know, my goodness, if there's any truth to the numbers, which I don't believe them, because I talk to black people all the time. I have three black daughters. They tell me differently. My grandchildren tell me differently. So I don't know where those numbers are coming from, but when you ask a question, and someone is basing their opinion on incomplete information or misinformation, and the other side seem to be pretty good at misinformation. We know what happened in the last election. They didn't stop when the election was over. It's still going on now. So there's a lot of misinformation going on out here. There are a lot of things being said that's just not true. And I think that we are going to break through that when it goes one-on-one. We'll see what happens after the South Carolina primary.
Well, you heard Clyburn said that he got a lot of information from his daughters and granddaughters saying that the black voting has not fell off. Maybe he'll reassess that that information that he received, because if he's in the community like he claimed he is, he see that a lot of people are not interested in voting for this president or the other guy, and some of them are not even interested in participating at all. So, you know, I just wanted to throw that in here before I go to a couple of these callers. Let me, it's another one here I want to play also in relation to something that he said. Here it is.
Congressman, let me ask you about what's happening in South Carolina this week. A federal court ruled that South Carolina has to use a congressional map in the upcoming elections that it called an unconstitutional racial gerrymander after the Supreme Court failed to weigh in on the case. ProPublica has a report that you actually worked with Republicans on this map to maintain a tighter grip on your own district by ensuring that 30,000 black voters would move from a neighboring swing district into your own. Was that the case?
No, no, it's not the case at all. When someone picks up the phone and asks you, what are your suggestions as we're about to get these lines drawn? I offered my suggestions, and I certainly didn't ask my district to be turned in to a minority district, and that's what it is. People keep publishing that I have a majority minority district. That is absolutely not true. Check the numbers. So when you hear people misrepresenting, and that's been going on throughout this whole nation for several years now, a conversation. Yes, I offered my suggestions. Did they follow my suggestions? Absolutely not. And so when you say you spoke to me and that there's an agreement, that is absolutely not true. And I told a young lady who came to me with that story, who happens to be from South Carolina, or at least she used to work here in South Carolina, she was looking to make a headline rather than to make any headway. And so I would say that I was not surprised at this. Remember, the court did the same thing up in North Carolina the last time around. Yeah. They allowed North Carolina to go forward with the gerrymandered district that were unfair. And so I was not surprised at this at all.
Professor Love, you know, that goes to what you were talking about earlier about the money given to Adams. Because when they released this story about him working with Republicans to gerrymander his district, his answer was, well, when they called me for some suggestions, I didn't work with them. I just gave him some suggestions. Wait a minute. I call that working with somebody. If you call me, Professor Love, and ask me for some suggestions, and I give them to you, I'm working with you.
Suggestions. I really like his choice of words.
I mean, I can't believe this. See, you know, listen, you mentioned earlier about it's too much laughing and joking. You know, when they changed, after that Telecommunications Act of 1996, and they allowed these Clear Channel and others to buy up all these stations, and they put all this laughing and joking and satires, Steve Harvey's and others, just like you said, I like a laughing joke every now and then, but 6 days a week, half of the day with all these Amos and Andy satires, when all this type of stuff is going on, people need to hear the voices of these people and the stuff they're saying. It don't make any sense. It just doesn't.
Yes, it doesn't. It doesn't. And somebody like Jim Clyburn, you know, just to add to what you had mentioned about him giving suggestions to the Republicans on the redistricting, he also has taken a lot of money from the pharmaceutical industry, more than $1 million in big pharma money over a decade. And I think when you look at a situation like that, it kind of puts some context to why it is that we don't have certain things, you know, why people can't get the health care that they need, because you have these politicians, including people like Clyburn, who's been in there for years, obviously enriching himself. I still want to know what he's doing for people. You know, down in South Carolina, I got a lot of family down there in Charleston. But I just want to know, what has he done?
Well, you know, I'm looking at some of these statistics and the poverty rate down there in that sixth district where he claimed it's not a minority district. I guess he doesn't know his own district, because the poverty rate down there is 20%, according to reports. And I'm looking at the counties that's in that sixth district where he is. Sumter, 47% black. Richland, 48% black. Orangeburg, 62% black. Bamberg, 60% black. Hampton, 53% black. Williamsburg, 64% black. Allendale County, 73% black. I mean, I don't, the Charleston, it says 23% black, 26% black. But it has a 52% displacement of blacks in the past 20 years because of gentrification. So all of these other counties is overwhelmingly black. He's saying that it's not. I mean, I don't know whether he's getting dementia or something's going on. He's forgetting. I don't know what is happening here. Now, he's working with Republicans down there to gentrify his district. Look at what Hakeem, and I know I got the callers waiting, but give me a second. Look at what Hakeem Jeffries said on Face the Nation about something that he was doing in New York. Here it is for the listening audience that may have forgotten.
Differences between the two parties. Mm-hmm. And I think once the voters understand that dynamic, the choice will be as clear as a sunny day in San Diego.
I want to ask you a bit about what's happening in your home state of New York. We've talked on this program previously about the redistricting that has been happening around the country, New York, to Democrats' advantage largely. But you've had this fight internally over the congressional map. Bottom line, did Democrats put their own communities at risk in your state by gerrymandering it to the degree they did?
Well, the Court of Appeals was wrong in the decision that they made, both on the substance and in terms of turning over redistricting to an out-of-town, unelected special master and a judicial overseer in Steuben County, who's a Republican-leaning
Democrats control your state legislature. This was a Democrat-led process.
Right. The process, unfortunately, was hijacked by the Court of Appeals. A bad process has now led to a bad result. You're talking about five different congressional districts where the black and Latino population was degraded. The only most significant Jewish district in the country has been detonated for no good reason.
Do you think you have a case to file in court?
I think that the lawyers are taking a close look at that. Okay. But here's what's most important. We're going to remain united because we believe in a very simple vision for America.
Okay.
Work hard, play by the rules. You should be able to provide a comfortable living for yourself and for your family. Educate your children, okay. Purchase a home, and retire with grace and dignity.
Thank you, Congressman.
I just want to play that for the listening audience because, again, Jeffries is over majority black district up there in New York. That he was involved in some type of redistricting and watering down votes. But listen, for the black folks all over the country, just remember what he said and write it down. Work hard, play by the rules, and provide a comfortable living for you and your family, educate your children, purchase a home, and retire with grace and dignity. Just remember those key things, everybody, while we out here struggling. Let me go to a couple of these callers that's been waiting. Caller, are you there?
Yes, peace and blessings.
Yes, sir.
To you, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, and your guest, Professor Dr. Love, I just want to quickly say that, you know, I agree with Dr. Love said about, you know, we need to have an agenda to present to this anti-black political system. We need to, like, hold our vote until one meets our demands. Like, for instance, say that we wanted funds for vocational training, or we want a separate territory of our own here in America. But, you know, Elijah Muhammad taught us that our unity is more powerful than an atomic bomb. See, they know that, but we don't. And that's why they keep us divided. And then I heard us talking about the black leadership. What is true black leadership? Well, the litmus test for black leadership is whether the enemy loves you or the enemy hates you. If the enemy loves this black leader, then that means he's for the people, like Clarence Uncle Tom. If the enemy hates the black leader, that means he's for us. And you know, Minister Farrakhan is the most hated black man in America. You know, black leaders, organizations, athletes, artists, entertainers, et cetera, are told to stay away from this man. That, you know, they're told and are punished for being in this company. Some try to get out of it, say, are you do you like Minister Farrakhan? So they say, well, I like him, but I don't agree with everything he say to get out of it. Well, you don't agree with everything your mother say. But I said, but that don't mean she was wrong, you know. But we should. Why should black people or a black person stay away from a man that has divine truths and solutions that can unite us and teach us how to do for ourselves? Now one quick thing, and I heard Dr. Love talking about the HBCUs, but one real quick point is that we need to be like the Asians. They got, you know, for instance, they got Chinatown. They're not worrying about no anti-black, anti-political system. They're good because they got their own businesses, their own town. Amish people, you think they worrying about the voting? Shit. But in the Final Call newspaper, there was an article, I think it was the April 15th edition. It said hijacking HBCUs, which Dr. Love was talking about. Years of unfunding. For example, I live in Greensboro, North Carolina. North Carolina A&T received over $2 billion less than North Carolina State University. Ain't that something? And it goes on to other examples. But and another thing is when a HBCU doesn't have enough funding, they use the staff that they have to do three positions, and that person's wore out, so stuff starts slacking off. So now they're threatened because their accreditations could be threatened because somebody lacked off on records or something like that, or whatever. And then they can, you know, close them down. So I just wanted to point that out, and I appreciate you all and your guests for throwing that knowledge out, as always.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Oh, how you doing, gentlemen? Look, doing an excellent job. You know how I see it, man. I'm laughing because you talk about Jay Johnson. I was trying to find an old article. Jay Johnson has always been a tool of the system, man. As a matter of fact, he was the one that helped the New York City Police Department undermine Occupy Wall Street. So they don't just go after the black people. They go after anything that challenges empire. Anything. As a matter of fact, I told you I sit underground at a missile silo in 73. We had these conversations. I got out in 76. I went in 73. By 82 is when the Israelis went into Jordan and tore up everything, and also West Bank and Gaza. And at the time, people kept saying, I can't believe they're doing that, but it never made the news. Now, here I am. That was 82. Here we are in 2024. And they're literally dropping 2-ton bombs on a place no larger than twice the size of Washington, D.C., and have the nerve to tell people that it's targeted bombs. Now, I'm going to say this to you. I heard a man say propaganda. Let me say this to you. There are a lot of educated people that refuse to use common sense. I'm going to put it like this. I do home repair. I've literally gone to people's home to paint up like a bedroom. And you move everything around, you're dusting, prepping work and all that. And they'll come in after about an hour when you're just getting ready to paint. Oh, man, it shouldn't have took you this long. I watched so-and-so. I said, so you don't realize that that's an edited program and you don't get to see the real life part? Like, read the damn paint can. It tells you what I need to do before I put the paint on the wall. I mean, literally, these are people with degrees. So when you talk about the power of propaganda, the gentleman is right. Not only do people not want to critically think, they'd much rather get that dopamine fix of throwing out their opinion with no factual background whatsoever. I leave it there, brother. But I appreciate Dr. Love. I'll follow him and check him out. Look, I'm going to see if he's going to be like Mark Lamont Hill. I ain't throwing no darts, though.
Dr. Love, any response to that?
Yes, you know, related to the comment about the bombing of you know, the Palestinians in Gaza, you know, what comes to mind for me is that we know very much about bombing. You know, when you look at Black Wall Street, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, over 100 years ago, and then also looking more recently at the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia, that's something that we know a lot about ourselves. So, you know, it's something that we can relate to when we see how the U.S. is using violence and destroying people thousands of miles away on the other side of the world when the same thing has been done to us here.
Wow. Let's go.
I appreciate that, Dr. Love, but I want to tell you, I take pride in telling people I was a Vietnam era descendant underground of missile silo, but I used to tell them every time they talk about bombing in Cambodia or Laos, I tell them, hell, you, they perfected it right here. No sooner than the Wright brothers could get a plane in the air, they dropped shit on us. No disrespect.
There you go.
Let's go to, let's go right here. Caller.
Good afternoon, good evening, Brother Elliot, Richard, and good evening to your guest.
I guess it's afternoon over there where you are.
No, it's not. It's 1:50 in the morning, Brother Elliot.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
You know what I mean? The conversation was so ecstatic that it just kept me awake. So my bad for tuning into your wonderful platform. But here, what you know what, Brother Elliot, I got caught on the conversation when your guest mentioned that the professor mentioned black faces in high places, and I it got me thinking, have I read that in a book? And it took me a little while, and then I remembered, no, I saw it on the WhatsApp. I saw that, I don't know if she was a professor or a student, I saw her making a speech in front of the university. And I remember watching it and not physically clapping, mentally clapping to myself and thinking, she's right on point. And I remember thinking, she sums up for me exactly what I'm seeing personally. And something you said, Brother Elliot, you said, you know, what picture the world is seeing. And it made me think, I mean, obviously I cannot speak for the world, but I can certainly speak from some people I know and I'm involved with, conscious people and some unconscious people. And I can say that, well, these are just my observations. My observations are that most people are absolutely distracted, totally distracted. They're distracted with cost of living. They're distracted with paying their bills. Hmm. They're distracted with keeping the roof over their head.
Okay.
They're distracted by the mainstream mass manipulated media. They're distracted by the television. The television is a massive distraction with all the soap operas to keep them brainwashed and out of their mind. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I don't know if she was a professor, I can't remember now, or she was a student at a university. But I remember thinking, when I was listening to a conversation, most people in, let me just talk for those of African heritage in this country. If you was to show them the face of I forget his name, that soldier who runs AFRICOM, who's the head of the army in the US now, if you was to show him his face, most people wouldn't even recognize, know who that is. They would have no idea who that is until the news told them that what he represented, and they probably wouldn't be interested. Seriously, because I was thinking to myself, who would actually know him? And even that woman at the UN, who would know her? No one would know her. No, they wouldn't even know her name. You know, that's how distracted people are. You know what I mean? And really not paying attention. So, you know, and that is very worrying. That is very worrying because when I heard that lady make that speech, I consider myself conscious and I try and interact with various platforms on your side of the pond and elsewhere. And she just summed it totally up for me because I wondered what would the hell, you know, you see this crazy lunatic in Israel, psychopath Netanyahu, Nati Netanyahu, carrying out his annihilation of the Palestinian people. But yet the reality of it is there's a so-called African-American heading the onslaught. And then there's an African-American woman at the UN defending it all. No, don't have a ceasefire. Keep killing these people. Annihilate them off the planet. And that is very disturbing for me. It kind of nullifies. You know, when I was growing up, not to keep you too long, my family's in America. And I always had this idea, you know, African-Americans, and I suppose I was looking at some of the bigger names like Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. And I thought, well, yeah, you know, they're trying to save black people, you know, and I kind of imagined them, you know, role call for us in the UK. And, you know, we're made up of people from West Africa and the Caribbean. So, you know, I kind of imagined that happening. You know, I have to be honest, you know, since we've had the opportunity to tune in and listen to the various platforms and go on the internet and listen to the discussions, I say this with a heavy heart. It's very disappointing. Very, very, very disappointing. I the reason why I say that, I get the impression, my evidence shows me that it seems the people there are very confused, extremely confused. No direction. This is just my observation. I might be wrong. No leadership. And you know what worries me? This country has an intertwined relationship with the US, and most people don't fully understand what that relationship is or how it even works. They really don't. You understand? It's they're bounded like thieves in common. Seriously tied up. And through that relationship, they conduct their affairs in Europe, and the UK is the head of it. Most people don't understand that, you know? So when the dollar collapses, what the hell is going to happen here? I mean, I hear you talking over there, civil war, civil disturbance, but I always think, if that happened, what would happen here? What would happen here in the rest of Europe? I mean, what I'm trying to say, Brother Elliot, is this. This is just my personal observations. I have a wish and a hope that African Americans will start to think outside the confines and restraints of the US, because the US controls the monopoly for the world, the money. They control it with the Corporation of London together. So it's like I'm thinking, do they not understand that the corporation they're tied to, called the US, is not just conducting its affairs in the US, it's pulling the strings for us here. And we need to talk, because there's things I would like to say on the radio, but wouldn't be wise. But we need to have a different discussion and bigger discussion, because, you know, seeing made there, I'm being made from there. They're not. I have absolute proof. And let me give you an example of what I'm saying. Brother Elliot, you know who this man, Nigel Farage, is? Do you know who he is?
No, I can't say that I do.
Does your guest know who he is?
Yes, I do. Okay. I do. I know he was involved in the efforts to have the UK removed from the European Union.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you, Professor. He was actually the soul man. You know, I used to watch him before he was popular. I used to watch him in the European Parliament. He was quite entertaining because you'd always go in there and act them and tell them, what are we doing in Europe? You bunch of people, you're unelected and all this song. And I used to find it quite entertaining. This man who no one ever heard of at that time would just go in the European Parliament and just tear it down. And they'd tell him to shut up and tell him to sit down and send him out the chamber. I just found it brilliant. But he's gone bigger than that. He's the sole figure which took us out of Europe. Him. Not a clan of them. Him. Yeah. And hear what another thing he did, Professor. When Trump got elected, I saw it on CNN. The first person they showed in America was him, but no one knows his name. He was the first person who went to see Trump at Trump Towers, Nigel Farage. He was the one. I saw it on CNN. No one can, it's there on the internet. He was the first one, not an American in the Republican Party. It was Nigel Farage. You know, he's been there just recently with Liz Truss. Liz Truss, for those who don't know, was a failed prime minister. The other day they had him, and she came out with some crazy economic policy, and they sacked her after a couple of weeks, okay? Both of them in the US. Back and forth. I'm just showing you how it's interconnected. You got an ex-prime minister there, and you got Nigel Farage, who took us out of Brexit. A serious, serious Afrophobic racist. Look, these are these people. This is why we have to have a bigger conversation, a real intelligent conversation, how this game's being played. Last thing I'm going to say, you often say, Brother Elliot, you call them the Europeans, those your American brethren right there. Sometimes you refer to them as the Europeans. Yeah. Well, the reality of this, the Europeans have got a navel string and the root is here in Europe. No matter how you see them dancing, swinging and showing their power, their root is still here in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, 100%. Yeah. They have not cut that root. And this is what I want to share with my African brothers and sisters in America. Those Europeans, they have not cut their navel string from their cousins in Europe. They haven't, especially here in England. They're tired. That's why we and my African brothers in America need to have a bigger outlook, a global view. Because I think when I listen to the conversations, the indoctrination, the mass manipulating media has actually construed it so well, done its job so well through their social scientists that I don't think a great deal of people, when I listen to the conversations, have that kind of worldview which we need, that you need to have, because you're important. You're very important. You need to have that worldview. We need to connect and talk. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to intervene on this conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution, bro. Let's go to Philadelphia.
Good evening, Brother Elliot. Good evening, Brother Richard. And good evening, Professor Love. One love, Professor Love. One love.
Hello.
How you doing, my brother?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm enjoying this conversation.
Yes, praise be to Allah. Professor Love, before I talk about any subject matter, are you at the Rutgers Camden campus?
Or New Brunswick.
Oh, I've been to both of them. I used to work at Cooper Hospital in Camden for 16 years. And I went to a lot of cultural events at the one in Camden. And then I went to a few events over New Brunswick. Both campuses are beautiful, by the way, Professor Love. Both campuses are outstanding. And, you know, Professor Love, you know, the brother just called Brother Paul. He had some good information just now. I'm like Brother Elliot, I didn't know who that gentleman was. I never heard of that gentleman either. So, I'd be the first to tell you, I don't know everything. I learn something, I'm getting better. I learn something every day. And I'm glad he brought out about this gentleman that he was talking over there in London. I mean, I had never heard of this individual. So, and you have Professor Love, so, you know, you was familiar with this guy, you know. And see, you know, Professor Love, I look at it this way. I look at a brother like this. So, Professor Love, you work at a university like Rutgers, which is, one of the top universities, I guess you could say, in the country. And you could be just like any other black man. You could be quiet and just get your salary and, you know, go on and be and don't make no waves. But and that's why I remind people like you, Professor Love, because, again, you could just go along to get along, but you have a love and commitment for your people, so you speak out about the things that you see that's not right for our people. You see about black misleadership or black faces on white power, black people that get up and don't do to bring other people with them or work against the interests of black people. You challenge that. And again, Professor Love, you could be like a lack of, make no mistake about it, you got several black people, the Negroes, that got that Negro mentality. If they had your position, Professor Love, all they would do is collect their paycheck. They wouldn't think about making way. They would never bring up about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. They'd be too damn scared to or lack integrity to bring it out. So the fact that you go out there and doing it, it shows what kind of character you are. And I always say people buy their character. So my brothers like you, Professor Love, for doing what you're doing, man, because you really don't have to do that, you know? So, you know.
Because thank you very much. Thank you. I mean, you know, my whole thing is I that's the way I was raised. That's the way my parents raised me. And, you know, I just have to follow through with that because I don't want to embarrass them.
Well, I feel the same way, too. As my grandma used to always say, my dad's grandma used to always say, you know, don't mess up our family good name. You know, so I always try to, you know, conduct myself out here and set an example for my people, especially for young people that's you know, younger than me, you know what I mean? So I always try to, you know, conduct myself in a dignified manner when I deal with our people and stuff. You know what I mean? I don't like, like you said, the minstrel show. That you'll never see me doing a Tim Scott or Byron Donald dance, you know, the pathetic. Because, you know, Professor, I tell you this to Brother Elliot all the time. I try to be even Steven when it comes to both of them. But I see these Negroes that run after Biden, like the Al Sharpton's of the world and some of these other clowns and stuff like that. I get on them too for being menstruals, but I don't give the Trump people no break either. Because like you said, when you see like Tim Scott cooning to be a vice president, you know, but that other clown from Florida, Byron Donald, what the other Negro that they got, they're running out. I mean, these people are pathetic, man. When you look at how they growl and plead and stuff just to get Trump's satisfaction, they're no different than the ones that do it with Biden. So I call both of them out. You know what I mean? Because to me, both of them are disgrace on both sides of the aisle. Because as I said, I would never vote for Trump or Biden and stuff. Like I said, because both of them are disgrace. Like I said, Professor Love, I told the list over this of Time for the Awakening. I got caught up in that stuff back 4 years ago. I went and held my nose and voted for genocide Joe Biden, but I'd never do that again. You know what I mean? I would never vote for individuals like him or Trump again. You know what I mean? So I make my point clear on that. You know what I mean? Because we have got to start supporting morality, not this so-called lesser two evils and stuff. I mean, that gets us nowhere. We got to start challenging these people because all Biden do is like he can't fill up with the other week, like Elliot told you, and just did the song and dance. You know what I mean? Just and he get our people out here with these lies, but what he did for our people, the loan forgiveness, and I try to be honest about stuff, Professor Love. I know several of my friends I grew up with, male and female, several of my coworkers around the same age I am, and many of them got children, they got grandchildren, some of them got great grands. And Professor Love, I can honestly tell you, I have talked to them over the last, I don't know, 3 weeks, and all of them tell me that their sons and daughters or grandchildren or great grandchildren still trying to get their loans forgave. They haven't got none of their loans. So I want to know, Professor Love, like Elliot, where's all these black people that Biden is talking about? They got their loans because I can't find one. You know what I mean? If I could just find one, that could give them a little validity, not that it will necessarily, but I haven't found one black person yet that told me that they had got their loans forgiven or their children or grandchildren or great grands got their loans forgiven. So I want to know where all these black people at, you know? I haven't seen her, you know? So I don't know.
Yes.
I mean, so just again, the beat goes on, Professor Love, the lies, the propaganda goes on, the lies and stuff. He's keeping out. Let's close with these last couple of remarks. Again, like I said, we see as a black people, we are in a situation of the moral importance right now because we see we got candidates on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat, that don't mean our people no good. You got warmongers and Zionist lovers on both sides that's about death and destruction. And like you said, and I'll take these last points, Professor Love, it's a sad commentary when you look at the black woman right? When we all look at the black woman as the mother of civilization, the cradle of birth and everything, and the nurture of black men and black women. And you see the struggle that black women have had to go through and still going through in this country, because like you just said, and you see a sister like Breonna Taylor that can get gunned down in her sleep. We have always been the vanguard. We have shown our women what it is to give birth and to nurse a baby. And it's so sad. And people need to really look at this, Professor. It's a sad state of affairs when you got a black woman like Linda Greenfield Thomas, that who I'm sure probably is a mother herself or a grandmother or maybe a great-grandmother, and she can sit there and say she don't want to see the slaughter and annihilation of Palestinian women and babies. I mean, I don't know how that woman sleep at night. You know what I mean? Since one thing, Professor, when I heard an old racist white man say he don't give a damn, I expect that them devils. You know what I mean? When I see a black woman who's the nurturer, and she's talking about she want to continue to see Palestinian women being blown up and babies. I mean, what the hell is wrong with her, man? Where has she lost her humanity? You understand what I'm saying, Professor Love? It's a sad state of affairs, man. It really is. I close on that note, Professor Love. I'll end right there, Elliot, and put me on mute, and I'll listen to the rest of the show.
Thanks. Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Professor Love, we're coming down the home stretch here. I got one more call, but before I do that, because the brother asked about the loan forgiveness, and he didn't see where these people were. But let me play this clip here, because somebody asked Jim Clyburn the same thing when he, just before he, it was just after the meeting in Charleston, at the church when Biden went down there. This is what he said in reference to loan forgiveness.
A December Associated Press poll found that 50% of black adults said they approve of President Biden, but that's compared with 86% who said the same thing back in July of 2021. What do you think accounts for that slip in support overall?
Well, I don't think there's been a big slip in support. I think that people expressed themselves at the time they were asked the question. Now, back at the time this poll was taking place, I was asking questions about people who believed what they were seeing on social media. The best example I know is on student loan debt relief. Joe Biden had promised that, and that was a big, big deal in the African-American community. And when he offered his programs to reduce or eliminate that debt, he got sued. And that lawsuit was lost. And everybody focused on the fact that he lost the lawsuit. Nobody focused on the fact that there were four other categories that he was working on, which have resulted in $137 billion in debt elimination for 3.7 million people. That was not being reported. And there was never a report in South Carolina about that until Joe Biden came to South Carolina, Emmanuel Church. I introduced him that day, and I decided to go a different route in introducing the president. And I brought that up. Immediately, they started reporting on it. Found one young lady at South Carolina State, my alma mater, where we're going to be this afternoon. She had gotten $256,000 in debt relief and had never been reported on. And these kinds of things have people thinking that Joe Biden had not kept any promises. People didn't tie these programs like the Rescue Act, the largest infrastructure bill in the history. Now, here in South Carolina, we are improving roads and bridges like we've never done before. That is because of Joe Biden's bipartisan infrastructure bill, but people didn't tie that to him.
The reason I played that, Professor Love, is for the caller that just called out of Philadelphia, because he was wondering about, he didn't know anybody. Well, listen, Jim Clyburn didn't know anybody, but he found one young lady in South Carolina. He just said it. I didn't say it. He said he found one young lady that had $250,000, and he didn't say whether she was black or white. One young lady. So All right, that's your answer to call out of Philadelphia. It's one young lady in South Carolina that had her loan forgiven.
There you go.
Let me go to this our last call. Let's go to New York City.
Good afternoon, good evening, rather, Dr. Love. That right there is dishonest, and I'll tell you why it's dishonest. I know 10 people, more, to be honest with you, that have gotten their student loans taken away. And I'm going to tell you why their loans was taken away. Because they was part of a government program that dealt with the state through their employment, and the loans were government loans, not private sector. The problem is most of the people that have private sector loans are not getting their loans taken away because of the Supreme Court ruling that went against them. So if you find somebody that has a government loan and they've been involved in a program for, let's say, over 5 or 6 years, the chances are that their loans will be forgiven. And that's what the message is not being put out there, because I know too many people who work for the Board of Ed who came in, got their master's, signed up for the program through the Board of Ed, and got that type of loan relief. Okay, that's the one. Private sector are having the problems with getting their loans forgiven because of the ruling that the Supreme Court made against Joe Biden.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that information. That's 11 people. Clobber knew one, and you know 10. That's great. All right. Anything else?
No. Something else also. He was talking about morality. Number two is there's never been no morality in this country. So that right there is crazy. But my question to you, Dr. Love, is this. Do you know what?
He was talking about among black people. He was talking about among black people, and it was clear that we had morality.
To be honest with you, I don't think that the majority, listen to the words because you're going to pick and choose your nonsense, the majority of black people don't have no morality. Why you think
the majority of black people who don't have no morality? Okay. Hey, listen.
Ask
him your question. Ask him your question, and then we're going to move on. Ask your question.
Dr. Young, let me ask you this.
Dr.
Love.
Do
you know what Project 2025 is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, now my question to you is this, Dr. Young. Since you know what Project 2025 is.
Professor Love.
My question to you, Dr. Love, is this. As a person who's intellectual, a man of understanding, a man of knowledge and wisdom, explain to me how we as a African people here in America who've been treated like dogs from day one till today can ever justify supporting a human being, a person that would support, back, and implement Project 25. Project 2025. Explain to me, as bad as Joe Biden is, and I'll give you this quick example of how we should classify Joe Biden. And think about what I'm saying, Doc. Joe Biden is like the slave master who sold kisses. Think about that. But you tell me that slave master who sold Kizzy and equate it to what Project 2025 would do to African people. Put it in its context, Doc, because I know Elliot and Richard can't, but I know you can.
All right. Thanks for your contribution. He'll answer. Go ahead,
Professor. Well, there's no question. There's no question that Project 2025 is bad news. I mean, long story short, it's essentially the Republicans and the MAGAs who have decided that, you know, there's going to be a dictatorship once Trump gets back in office. And, you know, they're going to get rid of voting rights and civil rights and all kind of rights. So, yeah, it's definitely bad news. And I think it's possible to say that Trump cannot be allowed to get back in, but it's also possible to say that Biden is problematic. So, yeah.
Professor Love, thanks for your contribution. You spent some time with us. We might have took you a little overtime. I'm glad that you stayed the whole time. It was good to have you with us.
It's been great. And it's been a pleasure.
And do me a favor, because I see some of your articles, I'm going to start posting them on the Time for Awakening website, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be fine, yes. Right. And, you know, I'll also mention that I have a website with all of my writings from the different, you know, different publications, davidalove.com, if folks are interested in going back to, you know, other stuff that I've written.
Okay.
So.
And well, wait a minute, before you go, just give out any, you know, to contact your social media, anything, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm on all of the major, social media platforms. I mean, you know, you can find me on Twitter, David A. Love. Yeah, you know, I'm out there, and you know, I try to keep you know, try to stay in, you know, involved in what's going on and speaking out.
All right, so I'll be in touch with you, because the struggle continues, and I know you're gonna be writing something soon, so we'll have you back on. It was good talking to you.
All right. Great talking to you, too. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations. to control your own products, ibibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities, escape the digital plantation now, ibibitumi.com, ibibitumi.tv, ibibitumitv.com, ibibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football.
There has always been a white man's party in the United States. For most of the history of the United States, that white man's party has been the Democratic Party. But then in the 60s, the parties switched places, but there was still a white man's party and another party that claimed that it was more inclusive. This duopoly system is a political arrangement that balances itself out and in which the two parts react to each other. This arrangement makes promises to its constituencies, and it makes those promises in order to keep them voting for the representatives of the rich people who control both of those parties. But this representation has benefited the black misleadership class, which owes its existence to the Democratic Party, or feels that it does. For that reason, this black misleadership class is the last part of the duopoly that will budge from this arrangement. But the black political class remains the most loyal element in that duopoly situation. Their allegiance is to the party that has nurtured their rise in social and economic status. Their allegiance is not to the larger black community, and that will not change. The duopoly system itself mitigates against independent black politics on the electoral level. It's not some fault among our people. It's the system that we have to operate in, or that has been imposed on us, that says you will have no independent politics, because that would violate the logic of the duopoly. It means that you are abandoning the fight against the white man's party because you are not collaborating fully and wholeheartedly and entirely with the Democratic Party.
And a woman, take it from me someday.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guest that spent some time with us this evening, Professor of Media Studies at the University of Rutgers University in North Jersey. A writer and investigative journalist, Professor David A. Love, was with us. Again, you can check out some of his other articles. He's always on one of them, the Griot, Huntington Post, a lot of different AP. You might see him on AP Wire. But he got a lot of his articles on davidalove.com, a whole list of the different articles that he's written. Got to look to have him back on at a future date to kind of discuss some a lot of this changing things happening in this society. We need more investigative reporters and investigative journalists. I mentioned that before. Anissa Muhammad that wrote a story that the brother talked about when she uncovered this stuff going on in HBCUs. We need more of those investigative black reporters to kind of give our people the straight story of what's going on instead of convoluted propaganda that we're getting from a lot of the popular media and some of these black outlets also. Before we go this evening, give you the lineup on Time for an Awakening, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with Brother Oshie, always interesting topics, dialogue, and discussion on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on in the week, on Thursday, Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement down in Mississippi, Brother Patrick Lumumba, Sister Crystal Denise, Brother Rodney Lowe, Brother Dove Sack, several of the activists down there on Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. That's Thursday, 9 to 10. Friday, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 until. Saturdays, the Elders of Sankofa with Dr. Janine James is host on Saturdays from 7 to 9. And on Sundays, this Sunday is a biweekly, Reparations Now with Brother Jamoke as host. That's Sunday evenings at 5:30, shortly before Time for Awakening, which is at 7 o'clock on Sunday evening. So just mark your calendar biweekly. So this program will be on this Sunday coming up, 5:30, Reparations Now. Interesting program. A lot of interesting guests have been on. I think it's been this is about the fourth week that is being aired. So catch it. It's on Time for an Awakening on Sundays at 5:30, and then Time for an Awakening is back Sunday from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take. We'll be right back.
Tommy. He said he wants to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school.
To save the children.